Good morning, everybody.
We interrupt this alert for another alert.
It's a Central States special report.
Guess who's back? Back again with another special edition of the Central States Ounces of Information podcast. Tell a friend. My name is Aaron Robinson, podcasting from the Central States Marketing Department, and I will not apologize for getting Backstreet Boys stuck in your head. If it did, that is a great thing. And this is actually not a bad karaoke session. This is another break from the monthly scheduled podcast to talk about another fantastic beverage that we're launching into Kansas City, Shaxberry Cider. This is actually a homecoming of sorts because co-founder and vice president of the cidery, David Dolgano, is a Kansas City boy. We get into that quite a bit. A lot of deep roots here, family here. If they're listening, hi. And really glad to have your son's product. But just like the last special edition episode, if you've not gotten a pack of Shaxberry Cider and you're cracking into this episode, that's fine, but it would be a lot better if you did. So, honestly, without further ado, here is David Dolgano of Shaxberry Cider.
Hey, can you hear me?
Oh, there we go.
This is the Central States Beverage Ounces of Information podcast, another special podcast, because, this whole thing of doing it once a month just really wasn't cutting it, especially whenever we start sending more and more things into market, and this one obviously being no exception. It's a very exciting one. With me is David Dolgano from Shaxberry Cidery. David, welcome.
Thank you. Excited to be here today.
I think before we even start about the ciders and your background and even being a Kansas City native, I kind of want to spotlight something really quick. So this is the first time we've spoke voice to voice, but this is not the first conversation that we've had. A few months back, you actually reached out on LinkedIn to discuss the possibility of bringing your fantastic ciders to Kansas City. And I feel terrible because I was obviously not the one that was supposed to be handling that conversation. And you were very quick in finding who did. So we clearly worked.
I was very keen. I've never been so keen to land a relationship with a particular distributor as I was with Central States Beverage. So keen, in fact, that I went into LinkedIn and I found you. I managed to connect with Corey, the on-premise specialist, vis-a-vis a fellow industry colleague out of the Rieger crew, and connected with Corey. And then I was feeling so fired up one particular Friday that I just called Central States' main line and I was like, listen, I got a cider for you and I need to talk to someone about this. And it was right before the Super Bowl, actually, in February. And I got patched through to someone named John, and I left a message for someone named John. Didn't really realize who I was reaching out to, and was absolutely floored to receive a call back from John Kane next week, and had an absolutely fantastic conversation, and all of the various ways that I reached out to Central States started to coalesce, and fast forward a couple months, and we're poised to launch our brand in my hometown. So absolutely thrilled to be partnered with Central States, and obviously with the Boulevard connection, it's, feels like the tried and true Kansas City distributor. So
coming home,
Yeah.
I'm so glad it all worked out, because I stand by what I said on LinkedIn too, I'll try and get you in touch with the person that you need to be talking to, which, you already handled that for us with John Kane, but I'm definitely the one that you talk to after all of that's been settled, and here we are. So,
yeah,
it's totally very, very cool. And honestly, to anybody out there, this should be a lesson to everybody. If you've been neglecting your LinkedIn, maybe jump on there. Maybe update your information, and you might end up bringing some cider to Kansas City. that's just how it works.
Yeah, you never know.
We are very, very excited to have you here. I was able to try the three that we're bringing in, and I'm incredibly excited to talk about them. But first, I definitely want to touch on the fact that this is a homecoming for you personally. You are from Kansas City.
Yes, I am. I grew up 86th and between Lee and Mission and in Leawood, and my folks owned a store, jewelry store called Diamond Expressions. That was across 91st and Metcalf for many years of my childhood, and then my dad opened up a smaller studio in Hawthorne Plaza in the U.S. Bank building there in 2009 or 2010, and now my middle brother Joseph has taken over that business, Dalton's Jewelry, and is running it there in Leawood. And my mom and brother still all live in Kansas, the Kansas City area. My brother and his wife just moved back again to take over the business, and expecting their second kid in just a month or so, which is exciting. Wow. And my mom, works at the Whole Foods on the plaza and has worked for Whole Foods for about, I think, 10 years now. So, lots of, Kansas City connections still there. And I get back, in a normal year, taking COVID out of the picture, obviously, get back, three or four times a year. Last touchdown at Kansas City when the Chiefs managed to come back from a 24-0 deficit against the Texans in the divisional
round. Oh, man.
2019 loss. I was at that game.
Just got goosebumps.
It was absolutely a stunning sporting event to witness. Lifetime memory there. So.
What a time. That's absolutely. And actually, the best part of all of that was, if anybody's listening and they're like, okay, look, we've had people on before, they're like, oh, I've been to Kansas City once or twice. You guys have a cool plaza and, like the Royals and the Chiefs. But like, no, you were literally dropping street names. You're dropping grocery stores. You're dropping jewelers. You're from Kansas City, David.
Oh, yeah.
This is clear.
Yeah, I live and breathe the Chiefs and Royals and sporting Kansas City. And it's, I'm a Kansas City boy in New England, but always got that KC roots in my heart.
Of course. So what inspired the journey up to New England and to Vermont?
Yeah, so I came up to Vermont for college. Went to a small liberal arts school up here called Middlebury College, and really loved the experience. Loved being in New England. Totally different speed up here. There's a thing called snow tires. It's a special set of tires that New Englanders that put on in November till April that get extra traction in the snow, which that's something I never could have imagined. And there's a thing called wool socks that are really cool. It's a natural fiber, and you can wear wool socks year round, and they particularly keep your feet warm in the winter time. So that was a fun thing I learned. Learned a lot of other fun things in college. Met an absolutely wonderful woman who would become my wife and now mother of three, and she's a native New Englander, and she taught me these wonderful lessons about New England, ranging from snow tires to wool socks and so forth. And so in kind of the early days of seeing about that relationship, I worked for an orchard here called Sunrise Orchards, and it's one of the largest apple orchards in New England, and third generation orchardist named Barney Hodges. And Barney was just a mentor, a boss, a friend, all the things, and just a really fantastic person to work for, my early 20s. And I just learned a ton from him and his family and that business, and fell in love with New England and fell in love with apples. And my experience working on the orchard side for a few years really led directly into starting Shaxbury with Colin in 2013. So it was basically college, which led to a wonderful lady, which, you know, led to a wonderful job, and job led to career.
This is your typical American love story. I love it. I love it. There's going to be a movie coming out soon. You have the right soul. Right?
Oh, well, hopefully.
Shack it up with Shaxberry. I got it. I got it. All
right. There you go. That's what's special right there.
let's talk a little bit about Shaxberry. You know, you guys are a cidery, but it's not your quote unquote, like, typical cidery. Like, just even going through the lineup of collaborations that you've done with different breweries or wineries or anywhere around the nation that particularly loves adult libations, like, there's a lot there to unpack.
Yeah. Yeah, we certainly like to think so. We got started in 2013, and one of the neatest projects that we kicked off right then was our Lost Apple project. And it, the project was inspired by Michael Lee, who makes absolutely superlative aged goat cheeses here in the Champlain Valley of Vermont. And Michael is originally from Maine and always spent time just traipsing around the New England forests. And New England obviously has a long heritage of apple production, and there's just apple trees everywhere here. And in an effort to make an alcoholic beverage to complement his incredible goat cheeses, he would forage for wild apples all around his farm in the Champlain Valley here, and would make home fermented cider out of these wild apples. And when Colin and I were first starting Shaxberry, he shared it with us along with a few other folks who made ciders on varying kind of home scales. And all three of those ciders that we tasted, and in particular the ones from Michael, just really blew us away. And it was kind of one of these aha moments where we were like, huh, we've tasted a lot of cider. Typically it's quite sweet and quite fruity and a lot of sugar. And instead we were tasting this cider that had this beautiful structure, wonderful tannins, lots of complexity, and really tasted more like a fine wine to us. And so we worked with Michael and launched the Lost Apple Project in order to make ciders out of these incredible wild apples that yield a more kind of refined wine-like cider. And that project really got us on the map very quickly. We received a Good Food Award from Alice Waters, the famous chef of Chez Panisse and the Bay Area, and we've immediately started to find distribution both in Vermont but also in, you know, New York, California, and really spent the first few years developing these wine-like ciders that were really, really unique, but also for us ended up being a bit niche. And kind of inspired by that Lost Apple project. And so another big point for us was when we came out with our rosé cider out of the 2017 harvest. And that rosé cider, you know, instead of this like beautiful table cider that would go with food, was, you know, something that I could open up for anyone, anywhere, anytime. And they were like, this is fantastic. I could drink three of them. Like, okay. All right. Now we're in business. We have these like really innovative, unique ciders that have always kind of given us this reputation around making special products and have led to a bunch of amazing collaborations. And then we also had this, you know, developed these three core ciders, beginning with our rosé, that just captured a broader audience and gave us some really wonderful volume movers. So that has really become the foundation of who we are today.
We have for sure come a long way from apples discovering gravity. Then it sounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there are three incredible exceptions and examples of that are coming to Kansas City here very, very soon. Do you want to dive into the three?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. I don't know if you had like a starting point. I generally try and start, and then I just get like checked real quick. But then, like, you know, hey, let's actually start here. But I'll lead with it. I think based on the ones that I tried, we can start with the Shaxberry Dry Cider.
Sure. Absolutely.
This one for me was absolutely incredible on the nose. Mm-hmm. It was I think the crispiest of the ciders that I did try, and yeah. Just a really, really enjoyable experience throughout.
Yeah, we like to say that our dry is the gold standard for a classic dry cider. For us, you know, this cider has been around a long time. We actually forged a partnership with a cider maker in England, a fellow named Simon Day, back when we first started. And we did that in order to source these wonderful high tannin apples that are not grown on a commercial scale here in the United States. And that partnership still continues today. And so the cider has, you know, wonderful kind of crisp fruitiness, but then there's also some nice structure and tannin that come from those high tannin apples. We sell a ton of dry cider on draft. We also sell dry cider, you know, when we're talking about ciders for Thanksgiving, this is our go-to cider. It goes very well with food. It goes well by itself. It's a bit of our utility player to pull a baseball metaphor into the zone here.
That's a really good call out too, with the Thanksgiving holiday and people, I guess, you know, obviously since we're, you know, 6 months away from the holidays circling back around again, but you know, they are just around the corner. And obviously those aren't the only days of the year that Americans love to eat food. So it's nice to have a drink like Shaxbury Dry Cider that doesn't necessarily take up all the room in your stomach that you would otherwise have with food.
Absolutely. It's,
makes perfect sense.
It's something we always are trying to mention to wine drinkers. You know, it's like you could have a bottle of Shaxbury, you know, or a couple cans, 24 ounces of Shaxbury, and you know, it's just 5.5% alcohol by volume. So you're getting sort of the nuance and complexity of a wine, but at the same time you can, you know, enjoy it all evening and not be over imbibed.
It's a great point. And the fact that there's no added sugar, the fact that it's gluten-free is just all the more bonus to the potential here. You mentioned the wine drinkers, and obviously that's a pretty big market. And I think that's a pretty smooth transition into the second one that I had in mind anyway, the Shaxbury Rosé Cider.
Yeah.
So, you know, trying this one last night, it's probably the closest cider I've ever had to a rosé that it may as well be a rosé, in my opinion, honestly.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what we were going for. So
nailed it.
It is a cider. It's a base fermentation of apples, of course. But what we discovered in some test batches in 2017 is that if we added grape skins, we could impart a bunch of interesting flavors from those grape skins, and but still maintain, you know, a 5.5% ABV cider. And it kind of bridges the category of cider and wine. I mean, technically speaking, cider is apple wine, right? You know, it's really the same thing as grape wine. Grape wine, you know, has a long tradition and has sort of cornered the term wine. So, of course, people think first of grapes when they think of wine. But technically speaking, cider is apple wine. So we already had the technical know-how to work with fruit and found, you know, we could just really make something that we love that's really dry but also really crushable, and played into the rosé craze that really was in full force beginning in, you know, 2017, 2018. I think it was Food and Wine, one of the big publications, dubbed 2018 the year of the non-wine rosés. And so, you know, you had rosé vodka, rosé beers, and of course, rosé ciders. So we were right on time with that. And our rosé cider has become, you know, is our number one selling cider to date. Again, something that everyone can get behind, regardless of whether or not they like dry things or sweet things. It's just a very lovable product, and we've really, really enjoyed selling it and making it.
It is an absolutely fantastic cider. I definitely recommend it to anybody listening in. Obviously, all three of them, really, but this one in particular, especially for the purpose of the conversation, I think it should be spotlighted that there's nothing artificial added. And you mentioned in the descriptor here that the rosé cider kind of gets its color from aging it on the grape skins. And so is that like just taking the apple base and just resting it in the grapes for how long?
Yeah, so we take the it's fully fermented cider, and then we get grape skins. And it's sort of similar to how breweries will add in different fruits, different flavorings. I mean, really, breweries these days are adding in anything under the sun to make yours peanut butter, chocolate. I mean, you name it, you know. So it's actually kind of a similar process. We get these grape skins. We literally just dump them in and let them steep for, say, 72 hours. And that's all it takes to really impart the flavor, nuance, and complexity. And we're off and going. So it's
fantastic.
It's a process that we've really fine-tuned over the past 3 years, and you know, we're using mostly California and Zinfandel skins at this point.
Incredibly delicious. Definitely a patio sipper, and I think all of Kansas City can relate to that. Even though, weirdly enough, David, today we are recording this on a Tuesday, and it is 4:20.
So, editor's note, as you can tell, this recording took place a little earlier than when you're hearing it now in 90-degree weather. We knew Shaxbury was coming, and we wanted to get this on the books to record, and we did, and it's just been a process since then. Silver lining, though, other than the fact that it's here now and on shelves starting this week, is that I can confirm it is great in both really hot and really cold outdoor temperatures. Anyway, back to it.
You know, we got snow. We have snow right now.
Yeah.
It's like Vermont outside. Being typical Kansas City, that'll probably be gone by 2 p.m. But it's just maybe not the patio today, but whenever Shaxbury is here, this is definitely made for that moment, particularly the rosé. But there's one more that we definitely need to spotlight, and that is the Vermonter, the cider with gin botanicals. I had this one. This was my last one. I had it last night. And I remember reading it, and I remember seeing gin botanicals. I'm like, well, there's no way it tastes like gin. And I was not correct.
Yeah.
So this is a very, very, this was probably the most like mad scientist of the three I personally experienced. And let's go into that one a little bit, because I am very interested in this.
Yeah, this product has taken on a life of its own. It's been a super fun cider to make. So, you know, when we first started with the Vermonter, our intention was to do this as a limited release that would sell just in Vermont. And we realized that there are a ton of sandwiches at sandwich shops called the Vermonter, but somehow, some way, despite all of the breweries and cideries and distilleries and wineries here in the state, you know, to our knowledge, there hadn't been a product called the Vermonter. So we decided to jump on that opportunity and use the typeface that comes from the Vermont license plate. The woman who designed this label, Anne Marie Buckley, who also did our wordmark and you know, the rosé can and dry can, absolutely incredible artist up here in Vermont, just did this design, very much a change from the, you know, the layout that we'd gone with for dry and rosé, but just absolutely knocked it out of the park. We felt like just really captured the essence of this state. And we sell a ton of t-shirts and sweatshirts and stickers alongside a whole bunch of the cider, of course. We took Vermonter into our entire distribution network just starting last year. And it really, you know, it's scraping there right next to rosé as our top seller at this point. And so again, base of, you know, just delicious, crispy, hard apple cider. And then we worked with a couple of basically mad scientists, honestly, here in Vermont to develop a gin botanical recipe that gives this a very kind of gin botanical kind of sparkling cocktail vibe, and piney, delicious, refreshing. For the folks out there that, you know, that love a gin and tonic, this is a must try, and it's become a huge hit for us and really surprised us, because, you know, outside of Vermont, it's like, do people want to drink something called the Vermonter? And It certainly wasn't the original thesis statement of, you know, the original purpose of the product, but the sales have demonstrated that it works. So it's been a lot of fun to sell, and really represents, you know, the subcategory of modern cider or flavored ciders. Of course, it's not just a cider with just apples. So that was a big
departure
for us.
The floral notes are just crazy in this thing. Like it's a flower.
Yeah. The crew we work with to develop the flavoring are just absolutely awesome, super talented folks here in Vermont, and we've done a bunch of projects with them, but this is the main one.
I actually really appreciate that you call out the design of the cans too. I meant to bring this up earlier, but this was the perfect reminder. You know, with the samples that we had, and we kind of took them on a little photo shoot around market, and these cans are just so colorful, so versatile, and just gorgeous. In all honesty, they're going to pop on the shelves. I had a coworker mention. He said specifically, he's like, "Are you doing the podcast with Shaxbury today?" I'm like, "Yeah," and he's like, "Make sure to let him know that he has gorgeous cans." And so, David, take that however you will. I'm pretty sure he was referencing the cider. But that part checks out. The ciders, the cans do the liquid inside justice. That's for sure.
Awesome. Yeah. The core lineup was designed again by a woman named Anne Marie Buckley, you know, working closely with the other co-founder Colin, who also has just an absolutely brilliant creative mind, and they've really stuck around. So anyway, thank you for the compliment.
Anytime. And, you know, you also talked about Vermonter, the name of this last cider, and whether or not anybody outside of the state of Vermont would want that. This has actually kind of been a recurring topic in a lot of conversations recently. But these days, with so many people working mobile or going to college elsewhere, or, you know, just traveling all the time, sometimes it's obviously a staple to try something that is local or something that's there. And there's obviously a huge base for local as well. I feel like that goes without saying. But there's an awful lot of transplants everywhere. And every now and then, either you want to taste a home or you want to taste from another region. And this one is pretty on the nose with being able to offer exactly that.
Yeah, we're excited to see how it does. You know, it's always interesting to see what the breakout looks like after 6 months of sales or so.
Yeah, I know it's kind of like that point now with vaccinations and with things starting to open back up that everybody's kind of tired of talking about COVID and what 2020 was like. But, you know, if you would just kind of go into a little bit, how has COVID-19 kind of shaped you guys as a cidery?
Yeah, great question. So in fall 2019, we signed a lease for our expansion space, and so we were working out of an old creamery here in Vermont called Kennedy Brothers, a beautiful space originally built in 1909, and the Champlain Valley has a long history with dairy, of course. You know, you might be familiar with an ice cream called Ben & Jerry's.
I am.
And so, you know, long history of dairy here in Vermont. And so milk was processed out of this space, beautiful old brick building. And but we were constricted in terms of our ability to grow, and we were really entering a point where we needed to purchase a larger canning line and have more production space, and magically a space became available. It's right next to our to the Kennedy Brothers building. So Colin and I, you know, we signed the lease fall of 19, and we started making plans to build out, you know, a cidery which will allow us to grow to a million cases on site. So a cidery of considerable size, you know, releasing about 30,000 square feet, which is, you know, about 24,000 more square feet than we'd before. So it was a big leap for us. And here comes COVID in March, you know, the week that in Vermont they issued the stay home, stay safe order. Colin and I personally guaranteed the last loans to buy the final pieces of equipment to complete phase two of our move in to this new space. And it was a nervous moment, honestly. In the 8 years we've been operating, that was you know, there was so much uncertainty in late March and April. You know, it was a considerable move, a considerable expansion for us. So we you know, of course, kept moving forward with the project. And with COVID, you know, we were at least 40% of our volume was coming from our dear friends and partners in the hospitality side of the business on premise. And so we obviously just got hammered there. And that's been really, you know, a challenging part of the last year, I think, for all of us in the business. Just it's the hospitality side is just such an important part of what brings joy and makes this business really unique and fun. And it's just been hard to, you know, hard to witness in many senses. But we were able to kind of, you know, bounce back from that sales hit in, you know, late March, April, continuing, frankly, till now, even really focused on our grocery business and off-premise business, and found our footing and started hitting our readjusted projections for the year, and really have, I think, you know, with the completion of phase two of this build out, you know, we've hired more employees now than we've ever had. We're at about 22 employees. So we've, you know, we've grown beyond our pre-COVID levels, and we're just super excited about, you know, the reopening of bars and restaurants, and, you know, want people to be safe and to handle it the right way. And at the same time, obviously just excited to start seeing some kegs move in, and hope these, you know, vaccines hold, and that the news just gets, you know, better and better from here on. So it's certainly been a trying year. And I think we're kind of entering this next phase with COVID in a way that I think makes our business stronger than it's ever been.
It's a good word, stronger. And yeah, you're absolutely right. That sounds like an absolute roller coaster of a time before lockdown. To this point, you know, where you come out and you're expanding, and you're expanding home, which is even better.
Yeah.
So we're very excited to have Shaxbury Cider here in Kansas City. I'm very much looking forward to it. I'm sure your mom is down there on the plaza as well. So
yeah, she's going to be the best salesperson in the greater Kansas City area. I can guarantee it. She part of her job is cashiering, and let me tell you, she'll be boots on the ground, helping to build the brand here. So whomever has that account has a lucky app. And
awesome.
We're absolutely thrilled to be in that particular store.
I can imagine. We are as well. I know we kind of have a hard stop coming up here pretty quick, but I want to at least get to a segment that I have started doing in this podcast, and it's a fun little thing that we call Five Heavy Hitters.
Butter up.
Five Heavy Hitters.
Totally random, off the wall questions, and I promise I'll make it fit the time frame. So if you're ready,
yeah,
I'm ready.
Great.
All right. Question number one. You mentioned you're a Kansas City guy, born here, raised here, from here, coming back in the form of a cider, which is great.
That darn technology, you know? There was a bit of a technical issue here, but for those of you keeping track, question one was, name one fond memory from high school. Back to it.
Grew up playing a lot of soccer. Soccer was what I lived and breathed. I think I was on my first team. Hard to imagine now that I'm a father and I have a daughter who's about this age, but I think I was first team when I was 5 years old. KCFC, really, two of the players would go on to play in college and continue all the way to play professionally. One is a fellow by the name of Seth Sinovic.
Oh, uh-huh.
And one is a fellow by the name of Matt Beasler.
Oh, boy.
And as you, I think, are realizing, both of these native Kansas Cityans would go on to play side by side for Sporting Kansas City.
And bring home an MLS Cup.
Yeah. And, of course, Beasler would go on to play in the World Cup as well and defend against Ronaldo and all the good stuff. So an absolute capstone moment was, you know, literally this was a premier team, not a high school team, but winning state cup after freshman year. It went to a shootout. It was KCFC Alliance versus the Legends, our sort of arch rival. We won in a shootout. I shot the first penalty in the shootout and made it. And winning that game and going on to regional, super special. It was the ended up being the last year I was able to play soccer because I have this rare genetic heart condition that you know took me out of the sport, but went out with a bang. And that winning that state tournament was just, you know, one of those superlative childhood moments. And then the fact that it, you know, the ties to that team. I was coached by a fellow who started British soccer camps and it's now part of Challenger Sports, Alan Jones, and just the ties to that team and the kind of history and depth there that have continued into adulthood, watching, of course, Sporting Kansas City, and now slightly bummed that Beasler, Austin FC, but...
yes, of course. It is weird seeing it in a different jersey.
Yeah.
Man, that's a hell of a number one.
That's something I'll hold on to.
That's fantastic. All right. Well, I don't know how this is going to get any better, but we're going to try here. Question number two. You know, you mentioned, we talked about how Shaxbury pairs very, very well with foods. It wouldn't be very Kansas City of me if I didn't at least bring up and ask the question, what Shaxbury pairs best with Kansas City barbecue?
Ooh, yeah, that's dry all day, every day.
Going with the dry burn-ins, dry cider. Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's been taste tested many, 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 many times. So that's not, there's no like conjecture here. I've been drinking our cider, as is my family, with Kansas City barbecue for a long time. Even out here in New England, you know, I can get the Jack Stack frozen barbecue shipped out, which, you know, it's not. Certainly not, you know, the same thing as eating fresh barbecue at a restaurant in Kansas City. Sure. But for a Casey boy here in New England, you know, it can satisfy a hankering.
That's a good one. All right. So Shaxbury dry cider, look for it. Barbecue. This is what we do, Kansas City. Question number three. And obviously this career path worked out. But if you could choose and switch careers immediately, what would you do?
Oh, wow. Interesting. So like completely out of business or am I like still in, is business, you know, is like another industry in business still a possibility?
You know, all of that, like, let's say you step back from Shaxbury and you just kind of held the control, like you're there, but your focus has shifted onto something else.
I mean, ever since I was a little boy, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I have two older brothers. We're each 2 years apart, and my middle brother has taken over the family biz now. We grew up, you know, being in the jewelry business in particular, you know, the holidays, Thanksgiving to Christmas, you know, my folks worked 7 days a week, and as soon as we could see over the counter, we were also working at the store, and so many great memories from that. I'm an absolute expert at wrapping very small boxes because I would help my mom, you know, the bracelet boxes or the pendant boxes, because they did free wrapping. And, you know, it's a challenging thing to do, to get a really nicely wrapped present. But all this to say, the experience of working throughout my childhood with my brothers, whether it was working at the family shop or, you know, funnily enough, at our house growing up, we had old jewelry showcases in our back basement, and we would make these epic Lego projects, you know, custom Lego projects, and we would put them in these beautiful glass showcases. It's like a little childhood dream, really. And
that's awesome.
I've just always wanted to do, I mean, my brothers may not even know this, but I've always wanted to do a business with my brothers. And so you know, if I'm done with Shaxbury today, I don't know exactly what it would be, but I would just want to do something with Joseph and Dustin, or Joseph or Dustin, and have do the family owned project. You know, our family had run Dalgan's catalog store for 15, 20 years. Before that, it was a pawn shop. My namesake, my grandfather, David Dalgan, had a pawn shop on Main Street called Dalgan's. So there's just a lot of history and depth there. And I think it'd be really fun to go back to the family biz.
Nice. Okay. No, I like that. All right, we'll move right along. Question number 4. Is cereal a soup?
Is cereal a soup? Well, I obviously first think of cereal numbers for whatever reason. Being in the consumer packaging business, so
this answer pretty quick then.
Is cereal a soup? I'll just go with cereal as a number, you know?
Okay. All right. Nope. That's fair. That's very fair. That's a totally different direction than I would have even considered, because, you know, the typical argument is always like, well, yeah, it's got all of the essentials, but then other people are like, yeah, but it's not hot. But then other people are like, yeah, but it could be. But you're going a totally different direction and just making an absolute fact. Like, no, there's no way a cereal number can be soup. So
I stand by my case, you know?
I save question 5 for last, because this one actually comes out of genuine curiosity. You know, growing up around here, Kansas City, you know, Missouri, Kansas, the Midwest, you don't really pick up on it, and you don't know it exists because this is just your home. But as someone who has grown up here, has left here and has gone on to somewhere like the Northeast, where an accent is pretty easy to pick up on. Do Midwesterners have an accent?
Neutral Midwest, baby. We are we're the only people in the world who don't have an accent, right?
I mean, as far as I know, I haven't told, you know, like, we have our own words, like, you know, I think the most famous one that everybody brings up is "ope."
Yeah.
But I have been told, I think it was my English teacher in high school said that people from the Midwest don't enunciate the T on the end of, like, you know, would not. Could not. Whenever you say wouldn't, couldn't, there's no T. So Midwesterners were always like, would, couldn't. I shouldn't have done that.
Yep.
So
yep.
I don't know if that counts as an accent, but
My wife and I go back and forth, of course, being from different regions, you know, just and obviously different families, and just, you know, our sort of family lexicon, our regional lexicon, and accent stuff, and the things that people pick up on out here. Plaza, you know, got the plaza. Uh-huh. Other parts of the country will go plaza, you know, the ah sound instead of the ah. So that, you know, people will nab. Sometimes a pin is a pin is a pin, right? P-E-N, P-I-N, becomes the is sound, and that's very common. Uh-huh. It's pretty subtle. But it's enough where, like, I'll, you know, I'll self-correct at times in front of, you know, New Englanders out here, just to, you know, just to blend in. Sure. So that's one that people will notice. I don't know if this is just me or a Midwestern thing, but, you know, I don't really go to the grocery store to buy eggs, which is what they do out here. I go and buy eggs, you know, like an A-Y kind of style. I don't know if that's just like me being a little weird, or if that's a regional dialect thing. I will say, New York Times put out this quiz that you can take. That's not just accent stuff. It's also, you know, word choice. So do you say pop or Coke or soda pop, sure, or whatever? And I took that quiz, Aaron, and I kid you not, not only did it put me in the greater Kansas City area, it put me in Overland Park, Kansas. I'm like, what question did I answer? What way that pegged me being from OP versus, you know, Casey Moe? Like, are you floored? So I highly, if this is a, you know, something of interest for anyone listening to this podcast, Google, you know, I probably just Google New York Times accent, you know, quiz, and it'll pop up. you know, obviously it's pretty easy to make fun of New England accents out here, you know,
sure.
Classic Boston, you know, Boston fuss and stuff going on.
Part of me really wants to try this survey, but then the other part of me does not want to at all.
Yeah. Know? I mean, it's like, it couldn't even have been my IP address because, you know, I'm taking the quiz from Vermont. Like, I was just like blown away. So,
wow. So I guess, you know, yeah, long story, not necessarily as long, but Midwesterners, maybe they do, maybe they don't.
Yeah, maybe do, like, maybe, you know, maybe not. I certainly think, you know, the upper Midwest has, you know, they have bags and lakes and, you know, boats and all that. I don't get pegged away our friends here from the upper Midwest do. And I do think there's something to sort of this sort of neutral Midwestern thing that's probably an anthropological study that's happened, honestly. It probably has to do with accents on news or whatever. Who knows?
The world could use a little bit of neutral. I'm all right with that. I'm all right with that. That's awesome. Thank you so much for taking part in these five heavy hitters. Thank you so much for taking the time too, man. This has been fun. The cider's great. The cider's coming. We're very excited to have Shaxbury here in Kansas City. Look for it very, very soon. David, am I missing anything?
No. I was sure you were going to ask me what my favorite barbecue recipe is, but that wasn't it. So I'll let it.
I was just looking to avoid it. But I mean,
I love all Kansas City barbecue.
I knew it. I knew that was going to be it. It's everything.
Yep.
That's awesome.
It's not one of the five hard hidden questions. You know, I'll share the truth offline. You know, there is certainly a favorite. Childhood nostalgia,
okay.
all over it. But we love all Kansas City barbecue here at Shaxbury, and we want you all to carry our wonderful ciders.
we'll have to save the Gates barbecue conversation for later. Then it sounds.
Uh-huh. Aha! Neither confirm nor deny.
That's awesome. David Delgado from Shaxbury Cider. We're so excited to have you coming to Kansas City. We're so excited to enjoy these ciders everywhere now. And thank you again for your time. Greatly appreciate it.
Thanks, Aaron. Can't wait to be back and be drinking some KC on a patio here. Drinking some KC. Drinking some Shaxbury on a patio in Kansas City here. right quick. So we're thrilled.
By Central States Beverage Company.